Welcome to the Employco HR Podcast. I'm Rob Wilson. With me is my brother and partner, Scott.
Hello.
And Jason Eisenhut, our Vice President of HR.
Hi, everybody.
And, of course, Jackson working the board. So
thanks always.
Yes. So thanks for joining us this month. So, Jason, topic this month is what happens when a business receives a EEOC complaint, or not complaint, really an EEOC charge, and kind of walk us through what's best practices and well, we've helped a bunch of clients with the process.
Yeah, it's scary and overwhelming, especially if you haven't been through a lot of these. But when it comes in the mail, it's kind of this standard, whether it's from the EEOC or your local state agency, like here in Illinois, it's called the Illinois Department of Human Rights. But when you get it, there's some check boxes. So the person can check, or the EEOC can check, if it's race, religion, gender, national origin, disability. There could be multiple check boxes checked on that charge. And then there's usually a description of what the alleged victim or complainant has experienced, either kind of in the form of discrimination or some kind of harassment. And then it's up to you as the employer, what do I do next? And we the first thing is act timely. So the first thing is don't sit on it. We need to have everybody start putting some urgency to it pretty quickly.
Yeah, and one of the things that, as you mentioned, and we see this quite often, where a claimant will file a claim with the EEOC, and then also in Illinois, for example, the Illinois Department of Human Rights, you have to pick one. You can't, very often they'll file anywhere they can, but you really have to pick one.
So if they do file under both, luckily both the EEOC and the state agencies communicate back and forth, so they'll know who is going to be the lead investigator on that. And then the other agency, like if it's IDHR in our state, takes the lead, then EEOC will follow their findings. So both agencies aren't doing this equal investment.
Right,
of work.
So you're going through it one time, not back to back.
Right.
Right. So when you look at the EEOC, there's so many different titles and acts that applies to. So you've got race, you've got pregnancy. Pregnancy was updated in 22 with the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. But you've got a number of different acts over the years that kind of all encompasses their EEOC.
Yeah, and when you do receive this charge, one thing you want to, because unfortunately one of our clients, they weren't a client at the time, received a letter from the claimant's attorney before they opened up the EEOC charge saying, please send us all of your files, your personnel files, anything related to any of your workers who had a similar disability in our now client. Sent them everything to the opposing attorney.
Right. So rule of thumb, never send anything to the opposing attorney.
Right. Just to the EEOC or state agency where you're required. That was bad. So that put him in a...
But, you've got someone in ops that this is the first time it happens. They get a letter. They go, I'm just...
Scary.
Yeah. And especially a guy threatening legal action or whatever. But yes, never send any of your files. You don't have to give them to anybody other than your attorney, and then work with your attorney or your HR firm on what you submit to EEOC.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. But be timely is super important, as you mentioned.
So most of the time, the EEOC or the state agency will give you as the employer an option for mediation. So if you don't want to go through the whole investigation, the position statement, I mean, there's some steps we'll walk through that are always a great idea no matter what. You could, if you want to skip some of this and the complainant also agrees, do the mediation. I personally recommend, and also some of the attorneys I've worked with in the past, that's a great first step, is to respond that you're interested in the mediation. You can hold off on the position statement and wait for the, see if the alleged victim or complainant also agrees to mediation, because that way that the complainant could tip their hand and show you an email that you weren't aware of, or a text message, or have something, or a coworker who is a witness to the discrimination. And that will then help you in your investigation, your position statement. So even if you're not planning on settling, or we did absolutely nothing wrong, it's at least a good fact-finding mission to find out what the alleged victim or complainant might have kind of evidence against you.
Right, and we'll take a bunch of steps back in a minute, but since we're on the mediation standpoint, I highly recommend it. And it's a case where everything's off the record. It has no, they can't bring the issues back up in further. So it's their goal, EEOC, is just to negotiate out and have the claim
be done with
that day.
Yeah.
And we've had a lot of success, Jason and myself, at attending these hearings and hearing with the other side. You know, that typically they're coming in with a pretty good sized dollar amount, and you know, the goal for the mediator is to settle this by the end of the day. And it's typically a 1 day process. It can be several hours, and you have to be prepared to negotiate. At the end of the day, you could still walk out and say, "This is crazy. We didn't do anything wrong. I'm not going to pay you any money." But when you go through that process, you think of it as a negotiation. They're going to give their side. You're going to give yours. You're going to be in separate rooms. You're going to go back and forth. My only suggestion on the negotiation: start really low. You know, they're going to come out and say, "Hey, I want, you know, 2 times my salary. I want $100,000 because I want my job." And you have to think, all right, well, do I really want this person back in the organization? And what's this claim worth for me? So, you know, you throw out a couple $1,000s. You put obviously a lot of thought into what number you want to go, but you know that whatever number you're going to throw out there, it's only going to go up from there.
Right.
And then your target then to see what is a claimant drop that number by. You know, they wanted 100 and you say, "Well, I'll give you $2,000. This is crazy. Just make you go away." You guys go back, you know, you're back in your rooms, and then they come back and, you know, say they drop it to 75. Well, you know, they just dropped 25%.
Right.
So there you got to think of what's my ultimate spend and work backwards.
And some of it working kind of forwards or backwards, how much risk do you think there is? Are you aware of any fault of your organization in this case? Because the more likely that you might not win with the EOC, the more likely you might want to settle more quickly during the mediation rather than bring attorneys in and there's billable hours there.
Right. Yeah. So negotiation, it's always interesting day if you like negotiations.
Oh, yeah.
So,
well, I've seen how many times you've come back where you're like, "This was great."
Yeah.
So,
and you want to get it settled, but
yeah,
in some cases,
save clients money. Yeah.
But you know, a few things that when you get the charge of before you get to mediation, you really want to think about what your position is within the organization. You know, they're going to want documents if it goes to a hearing, so you need to figure out your preservation of documents. You also want to protect against any retaliation claims, so you want to make sure that when you get this charge, you're working with the supervisors or whoever within that unit to make sure that there is no retaliation.
Yeah, retaliation claims are really, really quickly rising up the charts as some of the more frequently used forms of discrimination and harassment. Right now, the most recent annual EEOC charts and statistics say disability was number one. I think it was like 34% of all discrimination charges that came in were related to disability. And race and gender were still up there, like number two and three. They're pretty consistent over the years, but disability is climbing the charts, as is retaliation.
So you want to really maintain a confidentiality within the process because it's really not for public
right.
record.
That's the last thing
in your organization.
Right.
Because you want to keep it pretty quiet. Whoever needs to know, it's really almost a need-to-know basis.
Right.
And then when you start your investigation, you're going to have to interview several employees, different depending on what the charge is.
Yeah, and one of the kind of more commonly used best practices is if you have EPLI insurance, employment practices liability insurance, notify that carrier. So they're aware, even if you're not going to be opening a charge or using their attorney, at least you've kind of notified them that there's potential some charges out there, some litigation.
Yeah, we usually do that on just an advisory only basis because you don't want, you should have, if you don't have EPLI coverage, you should have employment practice liability coverage. Every policy comes with a deductible, so know what your deductible is and know how far you want to take this on your own versus just turning it over to your attorney or turning it over to the insurance company's attorney. Because once you've got the insurance company's attorney, you may not have as much control because the insurance company may then see it as, all right, your deductible is $10,000. I can get rid of this case for $20,000. So it costs them 10, costs you 10, you're done, and you did nothing wrong. Where
exactly right.
If you want to have as much, especially if you know you're innocent. because a lot of times insurance companies will just want to settle because it's cheaper for them from a legal cost standpoint than defending you.
Right. Good point. Okay, so now let's say you do want to defend your situation, like you've done some internal investigations. And one of the things that we recommend with the internal investigation, make sure you interview anyone who could potentially be involved. It could be witnesses, it could be the supervisor, pull personnel files from either the supervisor, any coworkers who might have been involved, if there's surveillance, video, text messages, anything that could be evidence, start to think A to Z on what can I look into for this charge of discrimination.
Right.
So once you've gone through that investigation, and also we recommend a witness in any kind of investigation interview. So if you're interviewing the supervisor, if you're interviewing witnesses, have two people in that room with you to make sure you've corroborated. You know who someone there is backing up with any note taking of what you're saying and what you're hearing them say. Okay. So once you have the all the interviews done, you're forming your investigation. Again, make sure everyone's on the same page in terms of confidentiality. And at that point, if you are going to be submitting a position statement, let's say maybe you've already gone through the mediation, you haven't gone through a settlement, or you're going to jump straight to the position statement, it's basically your response. A position statement's your response back to the EEOC or the State Department of Human Rights of how you're going to defend yourself if you're innocent. Usually, it starts by a brief description about your organization. Usually these investigators don't know what kind of business you're in. So a quick one paragraph summary, what kind of business you're in. And then also, we could open up by saying we have found no wrongdoing. We 100% vehemently deny all the allegations included in the charge. And then so couple summaries of where your statement is, your position, description about your organization. Then you can go into some detail about what the investigation dug up and other employees who have been treated fairly and something along those lines.
Right, and then you submit that to EEOC, and then if you already did the mediation or not, next step would be a hearing.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so if the investigator finds enough evidence, sometimes they rule and say this is closed, we don't find any merit, but if they call for a hearing, then just like a telephonic phone hearing with unemployment, you're going to bring witnesses. The claimant will bring witnesses. You bring your evidence. The investigator will talk to all parties involved. Comas usually follow up with any follow-up questions like requests for information. So some of this, if you're finding some gray area, finding some risk, you might at this point want to bring an attorney. You could at any point settle. So even though maybe you've already passed on the mediation, at this point you could think about a settlement. Especially if you're digging up some things that aren't the most flattering, or you find that there may be some wrongdoing. So at any point throughout the whole process, contact your outside HR people like us or your attorney and get some good advice.
And if you settle at that point, the case is closed.
Exactly right.
So something too, as you go through the process, which we've seen a lot of clients win, as they go through, not win, but there's no charges brought. One of the things that the EEOC then, they send a letter to the claimant saying, we're dismissing this, but within it, they say you have a right to sue. And so a lot of clients get that letter and then say, oh my God, the EEOC is telling them to sue. They're just saying, what EEOC is saying, we have no merit to this case.
Just standard practice.
We're not going to do anything with it. But if you want to take this further, your only option as a claimant is to file suit.
Exactly right.
And you as a business owner, if it comes to that, you're in a much better position because you can, you went through EEOC, EEO said, no, we're not pursuing this. So you've got that validity from the EEOC.
Yeah, and if the EEOC or the state agency does find some merit to the discharge, usually they'll start to hint at we recommend a settlement because they're limited resources at the state agencies or the EEOC, so they like to see settlements have it close rather than protract and keep going on and beyond where their resources can lend it to it.
And it's, if for a business owner, if you've never had one, you get the letter in the mail. It's one of those, well, we don't swear in our podcast, but it's right. One of those.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. Right. Oh, crap moments of what do I do?
Right.
So just take it a step at a time. You know, feel free to reach out to us on it or your attorney or whoever you work with from an HR standpoint. But just go through the process, and it's not as bad as when you get that letter in the mail.
And I didn't want to stand in the way of, like, because I know you guys have done this a bunch for client stuff, but Jason, your checklist is great that you put together.
Yeah, hr@implico.com. Feel free to shoot us an email. I'm happy to share this with us. But we'll be sharing this in our client newsletter coming up in the next couple of days. But if you're not on our newsletter, feel free to subscribe or just send us an email, and we'll send you the checklist.
And there's a new EEOC posting.
Oh, that's right. Yep. June of last year, there was a new EEOC Know Your Rights poster. So if you haven't posted it already, there is a new fee as of February.
Penalty,
yeah. So if you don't have that up, if you don't have any poster up at all, that's an easy penalty. I mean, they might give you a warning at first, but they have the right to assess a $680 fee or penalty if you don't have the poster up at all. What was interesting is, so this law, when it came out, or the final rule, it didn't have a specified deadline when you need to replace your old poster. So if you have the old EEOC poster up, you have a reasonable amount of time to replace that old poster with the new one issued in June. So just kind of be aware of it. You need to get that new one up as soon as reasonably possible.
And the fine's $680.
Right.
Yeah. It's way more than the cost of a poster.
Right.
That's for sure.
Yeah. We send posters out to all of our clients during the course of the year. But yeah, you can buy a poster for what? $20-$30,
right?
It yeah. beats $680.
Yeah. And technically, you could print this at your work computer and put it up. But if you want the big laminated one, that's kind of, and it has to be going to a conspicuous area like a lunchroom or break room. But you could technically print it on your own computer and post it. But usually, they have the laminated ones.
And typically, the laminated ones, you know, it has workers' comp,
OSHA.
It's like
state, yep. everything
7-in-1 or.
Right.
A bunch of different posters. So, because there's different agencies you have to do postings for. So, the all in one is much easier.
I think we remember when it was 4-in-1.
Right. Right. And who knows, 7, 8.
Yeah.
Every year it's a little bigger.
And although these posters, the EEOC poster only applies technically to organizations with 15 or more employees, because that's what the law, but we recommend it for all right. sizes organizations. It's just safer to post it.
So, between now and the next podcast, two things going on. March Madness.
Yeah.
So it actually, I just did a radio interview with a Montreal radio station earlier this week.
Sorry,
yeah.
Oh, sorry.
And you know, the Thursday, Friday, typically the first couple of days are the most unproductive days of the work year.
Yeah, this Thursday, Friday, it's up there with what do you call it, Cyber Monday?
Oh, wow,
that's one of the worst. And I can tell you from the IT side, when we would monitor internet traffic and stuff. NCAA tournament that Thursday, Friday, and then the shopping post-Thanksgiving are off the charts.
So I think Jackson has out on our blog some tips that we've done on March Madness of how what to do. Are you gambling in the office? Are you best practices? Do you have a TV where people can watch it? Some have pools. So we've got some best practices, and I don't know if the radio interview is posted out there as well, but same content, just you know, the HR side of March Madness. You know, you can use it. Use the March Madness as a great kind of team bonding thing, because it, you know, it's you've got two unproductive days, a Thursday, Friday, then you go to the weekend, and then after, you know, once you get past that, the you know your 64 teams dwindle down pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So, but you can get the mileage out of that during the course of
right.
you know 3 weeks, 4 weeks of
right.
people talking about it. People, you know, if you do like a pool. Like in our office, we do brackets, and Scott has awards for first, second, third, and second to last.
No employee money going in.
Right.
Right. Yeah, it's all free.
Yeah, so it's just, in our case, no one can bet on it. You can win something. And
yeah.
And there's always a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I had to go the second to last because people were dogging it. And I'm like, no, it's get a little more competition. Yeah.
And the other thing, when I think HR, I think of training and a lot of training that that Jason and his team does with our clients. Spring training's going on right now. Ooh. Because you've got opening day in the next couple of weeks.
It's 2 weeks away, I think, from when we're recording now.
Or a week.
Yeah.
Right. So
hopefully the warm weather will be here soon, too.
Just thinking of, from a training standpoint, that you do a tremendous amount with our clients on training from sexual harassment to a variety of training issues.
Yeah.
HR@employco.com. We're here to help. If you have any training needs, you're interested in hearing what some of our training library includes, we have online, we have live, in person, we have Zoom, you name it, we can help in a lot of different areas.
And actually coming up with the next month being April, we're done with the first quarter of the year. It's also a good time to send an email out to remind employees, hey, don't take all your vacation at the last 2 weeks of the year.
Good point.
You only have three quarters left. Maybe take some now or over the summer and plan ahead. That way you're not, because you know, I know a lot of companies have the use it or lose it mentality when it comes to vacation.
Yeah. And from a spring training, we were talking this before we were on air about training. It's a year-long process. So maybe use this opportunity to remind your employees what training there is available to everybody in your team.
A great idea. Yeah.
Every now and then I try and have one.
Yeah.
So, but we really appreciate you.
Idea, Bill.
We really appreciate you joining us and Jackson working the board for our monthly podcast. So feel free, again, as Jason said, to reach out HR@employco.com.
And on all the social media.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for joining us.